Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 159. I think that's where we're at. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Pumpkin beer.
Yeah.
And Jeff, pumpkin beer?
Lagunitas. Wait, do they make that all year round?
Pumpkin beer? No, but I was at the grocery store today and they had it.
Weird.
So I have pumpkin beer now.
I do enjoy pumpkin beer. Did I say bear?
This is actually flavored with pumpkin, cinnamon, and cranberry.
Nice. Mm.
It's like a little like Thanksgiving meal, but with alcohol and in the glass.
So it's not like turkey beer, right? Like
turkey beer, disgusting.
That sounds gross. Yes.
I'm drinking Lagunitas.
It's great, Jeff. It's great.
Jeff's really hoping to get a sponsorship from them. He's just going to keep mentioning them. And
I love it, dude. I like it more than Dogfish, to be honest.
I think that's wrong. That's just wrong.
It might be. That's right to my heart.
Whatever.
Yeah. So, Tony is drinking Thanksgiving in a bottle. Or maybe in a glass.
It's in a glass. I try to avoid drinking out of the bottle.
Fair enough.
Full aroma profile, you know.
But Jeff said he wants to say one thing about XCOM, so I'm very, very interested to hear what this is.
Oh, you want to hear about this? So, basically, I was really digging it, man. Like, I was getting sucked into it, and, like, what little free time I've had to play games, I was playing it. So I probably put a couple hours into it over like the last week or so. Then I got to this alien base. Now that game can go fuck itself.
You can't beat the alien base?
No. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, I go in there. Maybe I need to expand my team a little bit because I have 5 people right now. But I just get my ass handed to me in there. Like, there's those things that come around. They're, like, fucking all, like, bug-like looking or whatever. I forgot what they're called.
Oh, the things that charge you?
Yeah. Like, they get to move so far each turn, and, like, they will just straight up, like, fucking get all up on your guys. They'll, like, kill one of your guys in, like, one turn, basically, and then that guy comes back as a zombie. So, like, within, like, 2 turns, like, my whole team is, like, dead, and, like, I'm one guy left, and, like, I'm getting charged by them and zombies. It's like, you're fucked. So, like, I don't know.
Your team.
I have 5 right now.
How many heavies do you have?
I think 1.
Because I normally go in there with a couple heavies, because you need the rockets to take those things out. Snipers are really good to take them out, too. But
I have 1 sniper. I don't know. I just see, that's the thing. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I just fucking finally got, like, all, like, the laser technology off them and shit. So I was, like, I just, like, equipped everyone with fucking laser rifles and laser sniper rifles and shit. And, like, they seem, you know, pretty powerful against regular fucking aliens, but not those things, man. Those things sometimes take 2 hits with one of those, even.
Weak.
But, yeah, so I stopped.
You stopped, because you could, it was too hard.
Couldn't hack it. And I'm playing on easy.
That's the sad part.
I mean, I guess maybe
You really do need to get, like, that 6th squad member. That's pretty key.
Which I think I could just go buy, so I should... Yeah, I forgot how you unlock them, but I'm pretty sure you just go buy them.
It's in the,
The barracks or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's in the barracks.
I mean, I should probably do that. Maybe give it another go, but, like, come Sunday, which is fast approaching, I'm going to play a better strategy game. So, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Pikmin's going to take better time I have.
Sure. You're going to be like, I wish I was playing XCOM the whole time you're playing Pikmin.
Yeah. So, Pikmin's coming, so Jeff will be moving on.
Whatever, Jeff.
Well, we want him to move on so he can write the review of Pikmin.
Yeah. And hopefully I'll get time to even play that, because, yeah, recording next week might be tricky, because I'm, like, not going to be... I'm going to be a man in limbo by next week. It's going to be pretty sucky.
You don't have a place lined up yet to live, or?
I do, but I won't be able to move my stuff there. Like, probably the following weekend.
That sucks.
Yeah, I'm going to be, like, crashing on a friend's couch and working my ass off all week, so I don't know. It's gonna be tricky. I'm just going to go into a corner.
Move your computer so we can record our anniversary podcast.
I should bring my computer and, like, just plug it in a closet or something.
Sit in the closet. So, well, Jeff may be playing Pikmin. Who knows?
One day he'll play Pikmin.
He'll own Pikmin. He might not.
I'll get to play it a little bit Sunday, probably. But yeah.
Tony, you've been playing some stuff.
Played lots of stuff.
What do you want to talk about first?
I guess we should start with Fallen Enchantress Legendary Heroes. I played Fallen Enchantress last year. It's this, like, Civ-esque strategy game that also includes tactical battles and, like, a bunch of RPG elements. This May, they released the standalone expansion Legendary Heroes, which changed a bunch of stuff in the game, and now it might be top 4X game on the market. It's very possible. It's really good. The game itself now includes a bunch of features you don't normally see in other 4X games, from things as simple as when you're building upgrades for your cities, they get bigger in size, like physical size. The oddest thing about Civilization has always been that no matter how big your cities got, they only took up one tile. Now as your cities get bigger, they, like, take up more physical space.
Like they expand out like a normal city would.
Right. And the game has a bunch of other stuff. There's a lot of questing elements. So as your civilization grows and as you win battles, your civilization will generate fame. And fame attracts heroes to come. And you can use these heroes to go and undertake quests. Like, you can go to inns, and the inns will provide you with, like, oh, go to this tomb and save this person from whatever, and you'll go and you'll fight the monsters of the tomb and get loot, and you can upgrade the heroes with weapons. And the cool thing is, as your cities grow and as they get more, like, markets and armories and whatever, the shops in the cities will sell different things, and you can, like, buy them to upgrade your heroes. So there's a whole lot of, like, interlocking elements from very different gameplay aspects, and it all comes together in a really, really cool way. And the battles are a lot of fun now, too. It used to be the battles were pretty bland in Fallen Enchantress, but in the standalone expansion, they added a whole bunch of spell features and like interlocking units. So now your units fight more like an army, and the battles just make a lot more sense and are a lot more interesting. So a lot of cool stuff. Really, really cool game. Since I owned the original, it's 50% off on Steam if you own the original, so it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Really fun game, and during the Steam sale it was 50% off of the 50% off, so it never actually went on, like, extra special deal.
Okay.
But I got it for $10, so I can't really complain about that.
No, that's a good price for any game.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot of that. Whole lot of fun. If you like 4X games, if you like Civ, it's definitely an upgrade. It will definitely take you in directions you haven't been. One of the really cool things about the game is the world is alive. So there'll be, like, monsters walking around and, like, dragons. And as civilizations grow and take up more space, the world itself will get angry at civilization and start spawning more monsters and start attacking you.
Weird.
Yeah, so it's like there's a whole bunch of, like, other dimensions to the gameplay. You could spend, like, you could literally play the game and be the only civilization on the entire map and still have an interesting experience because, like, fighting the monsters and, like, completing the quests and just growing your cities is so interesting.
That actually does sound like a different twist on, like, the Civ-type formula, so.
Yeah, it's got a lot of elements from different games that you've seen. some like Might and Magic Heroes type stuff, and it just incorporates a whole bunch of stuff. And I mean, it's the third go around for the fall for this. They started off with the Elemental was the original game, and
yeah,
that one sucked ass.
That one was like a fucking train wreck. like I mean, it hardly ran.
Yeah, technical issues. The gameplay systems were all really bland and really boring, and like you could tell there were some great ideas behind the game, but they just never got there. And they actually ended up taking the game off market and not selling it anymore. And when they came out with Fallen Enchantress, they gave everyone who had the had Elemental a free copy.
That was that's a nice gesture of goodwill.
Yeah.
Nice olive branch. Hey, we fucked up.
Here's a free game. Please come back and play it, because it's a lot of fun. It is.
You've also been playing a little bit of Skulls of the Shogun with Don, right?
I haven't actually played with Don yet, so we're playing concurrently, but I think we're going to play probably tomorrow night, get some multiplayer in. So I've been playing the single-player campaign. So it's I'd probably classify it as a light strategy game. You play as a person who is about to become Shogun, who then gets killed and sent to the land of the dead. And you spend the campaign trying to take revenge on the person who killed you, who then tripped and fell and landed on a sword and died himself. So now he's in the land of the dead as well. You're dead. You recruit people who are also dead, and you fight battles between different little samurai armies. Everybody is a skeleton, so when people die, their skulls sit on the ground, and your units can consume the skulls from the other side and like become stronger and like heal themselves. So there's kind of this weird dynamic of killing units and then eating them.
Okay.
It is turn-based, so you don't. It's not like you have people like running all over the screen, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I found it kind of shallow. I saw some people are really high on it. I really don't understand why you would be that high. It's got a lot of like really cutesy elements from games like you'd see like Castle Crashers. Like,
okay.
It's got a similar art style to that. So it looks really good. But the strategy itself is pretty shallow. And I was having some weird issues with the controls. The game, playing on PC, but it's controller compatible, so I'm using my 360 controller. I got it plugged in. If for whatever reason I get like a message while I'm playing, or I end up like closing out of Skulls of the Shogun and coming back, for whatever reason it activates some weird bug where everybody starts running to the left. So like I'll pick a unit to move them around, and when you pick a unit, you get like this circle where they can move to, and the unit, without me doing anything, will just start walking all the way to the left side of the circle. So I spend the entire time like moving my thumbstick to the other side, trying to get them in the right position, and like trying to like hit the button to attack at the exact right moment, even though it's turn-based, because my guy won't stand in the right spot. So I was like battling the controls. I did see a patch came out today, so I'm hoping they fixed that, because it was really awful.
Sounds like a weird bug.
Yeah, I was I would play through a couple levels, and then I would end up with this problem. Like it would play normal, and then for whatever reason it would just start messing up, and my guys would all just start wandering off to the left. Don was messaging me while I was playing. He's like, "Did you beat the boss?" I'm like, "No, I can't, because I can't move anyone to the right spot."
It started out as a like a game for the Microsoft Surface, so
right.
Maybe
it's like Windows 8.
Yeah.
Exclusive game.
Yes, yeah, so maybe some of the issues revolve around the fact that he kind of designed it to be a touch-based game to start with, and they have to be a little bit simpler.
Right.
But yeah, it's a little weird that it's like, everyone's like, yeah, I love this thing. Like, maybe they really want to get into strategy games, but just don't.
I suppose
get
this
it.
Could be a gateway strategy game. I suppose.
I guess I'm way on the other side of that gateway.
Right,
now,
so you are what that would so look like. Far past, so it's that might be something like Jeff and I might want to like try out. Just say, like, hey, do we understand this?
Oh, good. All right, it's a strategy game. Let's play.
You played one other game this week.
Another of the game. I played two of the games, Skulls of the Shogun and Mark of the Ninja. Mark of the Ninja is a 2D stealth platformer where you play as this ninja guy and like jump around the environment, killing people from the shadows. And I mean, it's a really basic stealth format. You have a sword. Everybody else has guns. And if they spot you, it's really, really hard to kill people. Mm-hmm. So the only way you can kill people is by sneaking up behind them and stabbing them with a sword. The game includes a lot of, like, elements to really spice up moving around and keep you on your toes in terms of staying with the stealth. Like, it throws in dogs who can sniff you out even if they can't see you. And laser weapons, which instantly kill you, but are designed to turn off if one of their the bad guys are within range of getting hit by them. So that leads you to kill the bad guy and then carry their body through the laser.
Okay.
Which is just kind of a cool concept where you need to figure out how to kill the guy so that you can get through the field of lasers, or there are cases where there are several of them, so you're like killing guys and like positioning their bodies in such a way that all the lasers turn off. So I was having a lot of fun with it. For whatever reason, I wasn't in much of a 2D mood though, so I had to move on to Fallen Enchantress, which I instantly got addicted to, so I never came back. But Mark of the Ninja is really good. It's got some weird mystical storyline that I don't completely understand so far, but I think your character is somehow cursed with something which will eventually drive him insane, so he'll have to kill himself before he gets there.
Okay.
So I'm really not sure where that's going to fall out. And why? That's the Mark of the Ninja. He has the Mark of the Ninja, which is a curse, but also gives him terrible power to wreak havoc on his enemies.
Okay.
But yeah. Fun game.
Sounds cool.
Yes. It was only $3 on the Steam sale.
Yeah, I picked it up too, but I haven't played it, so. I did play some stuff this week. Not much. I finished Face Noir. That game is okay. It's got some, like, technical issues that hold it back from.
Why do adventure games have technical issues? I never understand.
Yeah,
they're so simple.
It's not even that it's, I mean, there's some minor technical issues where, like, the pathfinding can be bad at points, which is, you know, it's point and click, so, like, you want the dude to walk, like, clicking, he's not moving, it's like, just move! but that's, like, really it for it, but the game looks old, especially when they get close to the characters. I'm talking, like, old, like, you know, maybe 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago old.
Oh,
like,
God.
Yeah, like if you were to boot up Half-Life, slightly more detailed than, you know, the models on those characters. Everything else is pretty cool. Like, the environments look really nice. The story's pretty interesting. There's some, like, sketchy voice acting and some writing, which does take you out of it a little bit, but specifically there's this one character, Chan. He's a cab driver. This takes place in the 1930s. They, like, over-exaggerate the accent really badly. And then they spell it out, like, because all the dialogue appears on screen as well.
No.
So they spell it out, and it's just like, this obviously was not made by Americans. Like, it suffers a little bit from that same, like what Heavy Rain did, where it's like you kind of get this feeling that they're trying to portray Americans, but they're trying to portray Americans based on films that they watched.
Yeah, right.
Because it's, you know, it's like a film noir type setting. So, but I mostly found it pretty cool. There's a weird twist at the end that sets up a second one that I did not see coming. Like, out of the blue, there's this weird, really weird twist. And, but other than that, it plays like a film noir type story with classic adventure puzzles and shit. So, I liked it. It was fun. I also played Blood Mask. You guys probably don't know what this is because you don't play mobile games, but
Blood Mask, like a vampire game.
It is by Square Enix. Think a game on the like graphical level of Deus Ex: The Fall, but which is actually a really good looking game. Like Square's doing some really cool things, pushing the mobile front forward, at least graphically. This game is weird. It plays like a fighter. I think that's how everything is set up. It's a you have a party of three vampire hunters, and you go and you take down vampires in this city. And the way it's done is there's a timer on the screen. You only have like 120 seconds to kill the vampire, and you're like trying to match up combos and avoid movement by like swiping and tapping, and I'm not a big fan of fighters, so there's that. But it looks pretty. There's like this cool RPG element, and your teammates are made up by characters created by other people. So like you have to connect to the network, so your character gets pulled into other characters' games, and their characters get pulled into your game. And you can create alliances with them, which gives them bonus experience and, you know, bonus gold that they can do with in their game. While, you know, if you are selected in that way as well, you get bonus experience and gold when you log in. So it's a cool, interesting way of handling multiplayer, even though you're not actually playing with anybody. But I don't think I'll be playing much more of it. I'm just not into fighting games, so. The other game I played, Jeff would probably be interested in, is Prince of Persia, The Sword and the Flame, which is a HD remake of Prince of Persia 2, the original Prince of Persia 2.
Weird. So is it like in the same style then as like Prince of Persia, like the old Prince of Persia?
Did you play Prince of Persia Classic, the remake they did on?
I like Xbox looked at it. Like I didn't buy it. Like I might have tried out the trial.
So yeah,
it's pretty cool.
It's a 2D platformer, 2D action platformer. This though, I don't think they did a console release. I played it on my iPad, which I thought at first this is gonna be a fucking train wreck, because platforming requires precision controls. And that's not something you get with touch-based devices. I mean, they do some cool things with platforming, like the Endless Runners are platformers, but they've made it so that you don't actually have to control the running. You're just, you know, timing your jumps and doing that stuff. With this, you have to, like, you know, it's a 2D platformer where you're navigating a level, avoiding traps and having combat with enemies. And they do some really cool things to make it work. Because it's a 2D platformer, left and right are really all you need. You don't need an up and down. And then everything, so that is all tied to your left side of your screen. So if you want to go left, you kind of swipe to the left and hold it. If you want to go right, you swipe to the right and hold it with your left finger. And if you want to jump, you just tap the right side of the screen, he'll jump. Combat works a little bit differently, where it's all about tells. And if you play 2D platformers, that's, you know, that's how you basically do it. You figure out when an enemy's going to attack, how you can counter it to avoid it or whatever. This gives you a very clear tell. There's something that flashes above the enemy's head, and you press the block button. When you block, then you can move into a counter and a combo, which is all just done by, you know, tapping or swiping, and there's different combos based on how you swipe and how you end the combo. Either, you know, extra damage will thrust the enemy back or give you health that you pull off of them. I was really surprised. I didn't think it would work at all. I ended up playing through that game all the way and then starting it again to play more of it. Like,
wow.
Really, really, really cool. And I mean, if you've ever played the original Prince of Persia, that's a game that can actually be finished in probably like half hour, 45 minutes. My first playthrough of this one took about 2 hours. And as I was going through the second time, I was finishing levels in like 3 minutes, 4 minutes at a time. So there's only 14 of them, so I should be able to finish it in under an hour the second time through. But I really liked it. It looks really cool. Ubisoft did good job there. And it's like $1.99 or $2.99. So
nice.
Yep. And that's it. That's
great.
All I fucking played. I will be playing Shadowrun Returns for next week, but
nice. I wanna hear about that game because that looks really cool.
Yeah, it looks like a classic Fallout, like original Fallout, original Baldur's Gate type role playing
game.
So yeah, I'm really interested to see how that turned out. So we got any news?
Got a little bit of news. What do we want to start with? Do we want to start with Phil Fish?
Yeah. Start with that crazy dude.
So, I guess it all starts back in the middle of last week when Microsoft announced their new indie policy, and several websites started to contact independent developers for comment on what Microsoft had done and how they felt about it.
As you would if you're trying to, you know, write a reactionary piece.
Exactly. Two noted indie developers, some would say the most noted indie developers in terms of, visibility.
Outspokenness.
Right. Phil Fish, who made Fez, and John Blow, who made Braid, declined comment. And then some weird stuff started to happen. Apparently, Polygon had gotten comment from some indie developer who Phil Fish had some sort of vendetta against because he felt he was a sexist. And so he started excoriating the person who had written the article for Polygon and the entire website for being bad journalism. He started to get a lot of negative commentary, and it all blew up the next day when a podcast on game trailers called Invisible Walls had a rant from Marcus Beer, who commentates under the name Annoyed Gamer, who called the two of them blowfish.
Together, yes.
Yes. really, really said a whole lot of angry stuff about them placing themselves in the forefront and then not commenting, and how they really had to make some sort of opinion on this story, and saying that Fish in particular came across as whiny and called him an asshole.
he also
started making fun of the games that Blow
Beers did lay himself out as an asshole as well, though.
He did. I believe the comment was, he's a fucking asshole most of the time. I'm an asshole, but that's what I am. That's what I do. I suck it up. his comments were actually really funny, but Fish did not take it well. He blew up completely, and in typical Fish fashion, went too far, some would say. was then basically annihilated on Twitter by his followers.
And I've heard that the quote is a Futurama quote, but he basically told the guy to look at my life, but and then kill yourself or something like that.
People did not react well to reading that. I don't really care that it was Futurama.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. It's a bad statement, regardless of whether it's a Futurama quote or not.
So to make a long and angry story short, he took all of this criticism on Twitter, and then decided that he would no longer. He had announced Fez 2 the previous month. He said that Fez 2 was canceled, that he was no longer going to develop video games, that he was taking the money and running. He has since made his Twitter account private and changed the message on Polytron, which is his company's website, to say that the game is canceled and he's out.
He's like out of the business.
He's done. It's over.
Talk about drama queen, dude. Seriously. And like, dude, he's always like over the top and like saying like I follow him and I actually find him funny. So like sometimes, and sometimes he's just completely normal. But then you dude, if you're gonna dish it out, you have to be able to fucking take it too, I think, you know? And it seems like he can't handle it. Like he just gets all, you know, man up, grow a pair of balls, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't understand the whole thing with Polygon on Friday either. That just didn't make any sense to me at all, why he would even involve himself in that. Like, he had said no comment. What is he doing, like, ripping into somebody for getting a comment from somebody else after he decided not to talk?
Yeah, that's
me. I really don't understand that.
Like, just so you don't like this guy, so because he commented, they're bad journalists? Like,
right.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Patrick Klepek wrote an article yesterday, I believe, on the matter. Kind of, you know, just putting, I guess, his thoughts on paper, where he didn't really go after Fish, although I think Fish definitely should have some heat put on him. He also laid into beer a little bit in the way he handled it, basically saying that, like, as a journalist, you're not entitled to a quote.
Right.
You're not, like, he doesn't have to give you a quote, and that's true, he doesn't, but, you know, the same turns around, like, you're gonna be more, as Beer kind of put this out, like, they want to pimp their game. Like, Phil Fish is gonna, you know, when he finishes Fez 2, which he's probably still working on, and
yeah,
he's just not gonna be a public person right now. But when he finishes it, he's gonna want people to cover it, because otherwise nobody will play it. So he's going to be coming to these same journalists that he denied and say, hey, here's my, pimp my shit. And, you know, maybe some of them turn around and go, well, we don't want to because you're a jackass.
Right.
I mean, it is a two-way street. It's not, he doesn't owe them anything, but they also don't owe him coverage. So he seems a little crazy.
Yeah, I really don't understand why he would want to put himself in this position. But there's also a part of me that thinks he's like, has Asperger's maybe? Like, he just doesn't understand what he's saying and why people are so angry about it. And then he just gets angrier and angrier and takes everything. Like, he just doesn't understand how emotions relate to what people are saying and tends to blow things out of proportion that don't matter and then think that things that do matter are pretty meaningless. So it's kind of a weird thing to watch him, because this isn't the first time he's kicked the hornet's nest. Like, he's done this on several occasions.
Multiple times. Like, I mean, as annoyed gamer or spear, whatever the hell you want to call him today, as he said, like, you know, the guy comes across, I believe he called him a toss pot.
Yes.
And
which is a word everyone should use.
Yeah, I like that word. but he said, like, you know, they filmed Indie Game the movie, both him and Jonathan Blow. And he's like, Blow just comes off as kind of like this dude that wants to make games. Maybe a little bit pretentious, but whatever. But Fish just comes across as an asshole. Like, all the time.
I still need to see that.
And it's like, and when Indie Game the movie was made, Fez wasn't even out yet. Like, he was developing Fez, so it's like, you had this attitude before you even did anything.
Right. It's just how he is.
Yeah. It's crazy.
No, it's gotta be pathological. He can't help it. He absolutely can't help it. In which case, maybe he's better off with a private Twitter account and finding somebody to do PR for him.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna, like, he seems like the perfect example of somebody that needs to have their hand held through this process. Like, you don't need, like, you're fucking brilliant, whatever, go make your game. I'll talk to them out there. You stay in this room, don't come out.
Well, all said and done, I actually hope that, you know, Fez 2 does happen, because I like Fez, so.
I think that he'll go into hiding, he'll make his game, he'll come out at some point.
Yeah. I mean, one, he bitched and complained about how much money it costs to do anything with Fez originally.
Right.
Like, how much money is there to run away with?
Right, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, if it costs $10,000 to add a patch on Xbox Live and you couldn't afford that, how do you have money to take and run away with it?
Right. And I'm sure,
where did it come from?
I'm sure he's invested some of that money into making Fez 2, so he doesn't have all that money to rely on, so.
Well, I think it was selling well. Like, it's on PC now, right? Like, they finally.
Right.
Yeah, so I think it was selling pretty well when they released it on PC. But still, you're talking a $10 game. You know what I mean? It's like.
Right. Although you do have to figure out, like, I think it's, Polytron is only him and one other person, so he's probably getting a large chunk of change.
It's like, even if, I don't know what Valve's, you know, cut is, but, what I'm hearing is generally accepted terms for digital releases are, like, 70-30. You know, developer pub get 70%, and, you know, the marketplace gets 30. So he self-published on PC. Polytron should be getting that 70%. So they're getting $7 out of every 10. Even if he's only taking half of that, depends on how many games you sell, I guess.
Right.
Jesus.
But get that man a PR firm. Dear God.
Yeah. I'm like, keep him away from the internet. and I also understand where they wouldn't want to comment on that story.
Right.
Like, I understand why you'd want them to comment, but I don't understand why they wouldn't want to comment. Like, both have been highly critical of Microsoft in the past. Jonathan Blow has signed the witness over to Sony, like,
right.
I mean, as an exclusive, at least for the time being, like, what do you want them to say? Yeah, that's great. Like, I guess that's good for other people. It's not going to work for us right now.
Right. It's too late. Microsoft missed their chance with
me.
And that's fine. You don't have to say anything.
It's just that, the reaction afterwards, the craziness. What? Has Jonathan Blow said anything about any of this, or has he just been like, I'm out of...
I think he did say something, but it just didn't blow up in the way that Fish did.
Maybe he approached it from a different angle and...
He approached it like a human
sane.
Being,
yeah. Maybe he approached it as a sane person. it's going to be a shame if he's not around, because he's good for a crazy news story at least once a month, so... Anything else going on?
Oh, we have Nintendo sales figures.
Is this going to make Jeff sad?
I guess we could start with the fact that Nintendo actually did net a profit for this quarter. But we can get into why that was. It had nothing to do with sales. They only sold 160,000 Wii U consoles over the past 3 months.
Jeez, Jeff did the math before the show. What'd you say it came out to about
53,000, some change. Yeah.
They sold 90,000 in Japan, 60,000 in the U.S., and only 10,000 in Europe and Australia.
Okay, so that's 160,000 worldwide over the last 3 months.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's really bad here. Like, I no longer work at GameStop, but, like, dude, we were not selling them. But I heard there was a spike in Japan when Pikmin released. Like Pikmin was actually selling systems over there. Did you guys see like any news story like that, or I imagine this?
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
I didn't, but that seems to be how Japan also operates. Like, you know, when Monster Hunter released or whatever, you know, people bought the system that was on. Yeah, I guess if a game people want comes out, obviously, that's how it works here too. A game people want to come out, they buy shit.
Yeah, I didn't know that, you know, Pikmin was such a big deal in Japan, because it's not really a big deal here. Like, I feel like it should be. Like, it's a great game, but, you know. Like, it's not going to... I don't think Pikmin's going to push systems.
No, if anything's going to, you know, cause a spike in sales this year for Nintendo, it'll be the Mario game at the end of the year.
Right.
Yeah.
In the past quarter, they only sold 1.3 million... software units as well.
Really?
Yeah. Total.
You know what their number one seller was, right? I know what it is.
Well, that's just Wii U, so...
No. Okay, software.
I'm gonna say Animal Crossing did really well, and the 3DS did have very good numbers for the quarter.
Yeah. Animal Crossing...
It sold 1.4 million units and 11 million games, so...
Animal Crossing saved their ass.
The Wii, interestingly enough, the Wii sold more units than the Wii U, 210,000, and 3.67 million games.
Jeez.
Which is, like, what, triple what the Wii
yes,
U's?
Yes, what the Wii U sold.
Jeez.
I guess they're, you know... I mean...
The Wii U back.
They can take the hit on the Wii U for now.
We briefly talked about this before the show, though. Like you were like, why would you buy the Wii over that? But I could be wrong here, but if I remember correctly, when the PlayStation 3 launched, the PlayStation 2, at least initially, like maybe not outside of like that first 2 months of sales, but you know that following year, January through there, like. The PS2 was routinely outselling the PS3. I mean, and there was a huge price gap there as well. Like the PS2
and I think there was also a lack of supply chain, too.
Right. And there's no lack of systems for the Wii U.
they're
not selling out.
There was a supermarket in the UK announced that, like the number two selling supermarket in the UK, announced that they were no longer going to stock the Wii U because they weren't selling them.
Wow.
So.
I don't think we could say that the Wii U is doomed. Like, I think Nintendo could take the hit on it because it's getting profit elsewhere. And I think when Smash Bros. Comes out, there's people that are like nuts about that game. It's like the only Nintendo game I don't care about it at all. But I see Smash Brothers selling some systems.
Well, I mean, I think that's the big problem now, right? There's just nothing to play.
Oh, there's nothing been coming out. Like, there is this fall. Like, there's, like, I'm probably buying more games on the Wii U this fall than anything, so.
Honestly, when was the last big Wii U title to come out? Like, March?
March.
Lego?
Yeah, Lego. Like, what, 6 months ago? Or
it's
well,
like,
four months ago?
And it's like they're putting stuff out on it, like Lego Batman 2. Good game, but why would you buy it?
Right.
Yeah, Wii U for $50.
Already out on everything.
It's like I would maybe get a game like that on the Wii U if you put it at the price that it is on 360 and stuff. Like,
right, $20.
Which makes me, you know what, it reminds me, I saw that there was like on Amazon or something, Need for Speed Most Wanted was like under $20 for Wii U, and I was going to snatch it, but I forgot. Oh well. I played it.
Any other news regarding their financials, though?
They actually showed a net profit of, I guess, 8.6 billion yen, so that's $88 million.
Okay.
Although they did show an operating loss because of research and development for the Wii U and marketing costs, so they actually they sort of made money and sort of didn't.
Well, that's.
But at least they're not like showing a massive loss.
Right.
Maybe they need Animal Crossing for Wii U. I'd take that.
I think that might have been a good idea. It's odd because the 3DS is doing fine. You just kind of wonder if they could, you know, release that on both systems or like redesign it somehow. It's not like they haven't done it before.
Yeah, they could basically, yeah, like just do it. I'm sure there will be one day. It seems like people prefer Animal Crossing more on the handheld. And I'm starting to understand that thinking. Because at first, like, I was always about...
I don't know. Like, I have played it more this week. Like, I know I said last week I hadn't played it in, like, a week. But I played it more. I've gone back, cleaned up my town, back to playing it, you know, once a day or whatever.
I've been slipping.
I don't know that if it was on the console, if I would still be playing it, or if I would have played it quite as much.
Well, that the GameCube one was the one I fell in love with, and that's the one that probably is still my favorite. But it was different back then, because in the GameCube one, it was four of, it was like me and like everyone I was like living with at the time. Like you each had a house in the town, like in the center of town, right next to each other. We were always writing letters to each other and like leaving stupid notes and like poking fun at each other.
Right.
Like that was a really fun aspect of it. And then two, like, it was completely new experience for me at the time. That is a big part of it. And you'd got Nintendo games. Like, you got NES games in it, so.
Yeah, which you don't get now. And honestly, like, if I had to sit down and put a disc in and sit in front of my, like, I don't know if I'd want to sit down and do chores in front of my tele. Like, I take my 3DS out, like, you know, when I'm really not doing anything, I pop it open, go dig up a couple fossils, and sell them, and then I can close it. And like, I don't play it for long stretches of time. I play it very, like, almost like you'd play a mobile game, which I mean, I guess technically it is. It's on a mobile platform, but
I saw someone call it. I think it was Yahtzee. He called it like a Facebook game. Like the original Animal Crossing is like it's a Facebook game before there were Facebook games.
I can see that.
And you should watch his review of it, because it kind of sums up how I think you, I, and a lot of people feel about that game, where it's just like, this is the dumbest, dullest game ever, but God, I can't stop. Like, it gets its hooks in you.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's stuff to, it's really weird, because there's no narrative. There's no real reason to play the fucking thing. But it's like, alright, well, if I get this many bells, I can upgrade my house.
It's essentially buying and selling, yeah.
Yeah, like, so it's like, all right, I'm gonna do all this mundane shit to get enough bells so I can upgrade this house. I don't really give a shit about, but it's like a goal that you're striving towards. It's like, that's where I think it hooks you in. It's like, you just, you know, at a very base level, it's a game of goals, and you know, the way to get them is very mundane, but it's like, here's your goal, and you try and do it, and you get enough, and then here's another goal. You just keep going. It gets very repetitive. And
it's, to me, the reward is when it's like you get something really cool that you like in your house, which I don't know. It just sits there.
It's so dumb. Like my wife was like, what, like, I popped it open when we were up the mountains. She was reading a book, and I'm like sitting there in bed, like, running around the fucking house, like the fucking area, and she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, digging up fossils. And then she's like, "Why?" And then I was like, "So I can make my house bigger." It sounds so dumb. And when you like lay it out, it does. It sounds retarded.
That's why hearing you guys talk about it is the reason I will never play.
I don't know, I really like the series, but I'm starting to lean more towards, like, most other people will say it belongs on handheld, and I'm kind of seeing why they think that way, because it's just like you said, like, you don't want to, like, boot up your whole console and your TV and everything just to play something for, like, a half hour.
Yeah, and I mean, I could totally see why people would want the digital version of it at that, where you could have another, you know, another cart in your system, and then, like, you know, you're not going to sit down and play that, maybe on the bus ride or whatever, but pop that open, you do your stuff in Animal Crossing, and then when you get off the bus, you shut it down and move on, and it's just there. It's like an app, like this weird time-wasting app that has no real purpose and is making me sad just thinking about the fact that I'm still playing it.
Well, and you still have to see all the seasons. Everything changes.
Right, it's so dumb.
There's different bugs, there's different, you know, different everything, like, in each season. And all we've seen so far is summer, so.
It's like, I'm just, like, sitting there, like, every once in a while, like, some of these people come up and they go, hey, I want to move out. I'm like, oh, don't move out. Like, the one person I fucking want to move out won't, the one animal, like, he won't fucking move out. Like, I kind of just want to go around his house and dig holes and...
You know what happened, dude? I'm the opposite. I want, like, everyone to leave, right? Like, I hate all the animals in my town.
Okay.
Except for, like, one. There's one I really, like, actually there's two. But one of the ones I really liked, like, Aaron sends me a picture the other day on my iPhone, and he's in Aaron's town. He moved there. I'm like, motherfucker, dude. Like, and then Aaron's like, yeah, he got sick of your ramshackle town or whatever. And I was like, So, yeah, that kind of upset me. Because, like, he asked me...
By a bunch of pixels.
Yeah, the thing said once, like, you want to move? I'm like, no, don't move, dude. And then, like, I didn't play for 2 days, and he moved on me. And the other ones...
To his fate. Said at you.
It's like, the other ones who I like, please ask me if you're going to move. Like, they won't do it. I'm like, God, I hate all you fucking stupid Rams. I'm like, I got like two Rams in my town, and they're stupid looking.
And you can do nothing to them.
I tried to complain about them, but I guess there's like a complain feature in the game, but it's just if like, if they say something that's like, someone programmed them to say something like, offensive, I guess. So you can't really kick them out, you can just make them not say what they're saying.
Great, that's useful.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm grabbing a beer.
Fine.
What do we got next?
The last thing I have is a review that was launched today, and I just sent you guys the link on Polygon for Dragon's Crown, which I believe is a Vita game that Atlus just released.
Sure. PS3 and Vita.
I mean, I don't care about this game at all. It's
whatever. A 2D side-scrolling brawler.
It's a brawler.
RPG brawler.
I would never play this game. I would never read the review. But this one has gotten a lot of attention. Mostly because, and I've never seen this before in a video game review, it directly confronts the sexism inherent in the game and makes that part of the reviewer's opinion of what the game launches, calling it an unapologetic adolescent fantasy, excoriating its serious liberties with female anatomy, and generally talking about the over-sexualized characters and how they ruined the reviewer's experience with the game.
Is it Dragon's Crown?
Yes. Dragon's Crown.
Oh, really?
This review has actually, for some reason, become very controversial, because a lot of people feel that the comments on sexuality and her opinions on that are out of place in this kind of environment.
I mean, I will say, dude, like, look at how many games where they could be looked at as... Like, look at fucking Lollipop Chainsaw. I'm sure it's no worse than that. That said, dude, like, why can't she say that affected her opinion of the game?
Right.
You know?
I think that's the core here, is that the review is a measure of someone's experience with the game, and her experience was ruined by seeing what she saw. And why shouldn't that be an inherent part of her review?
I mean, feel free to review it how you want. Like, if you didn't like the sexist stuff in the game, why would you not mention that? Like, I don't know, like, sure, it wouldn't bother me. I'd be like, cool, boobies.
Right. Well, and I think if you read, what's his name? No Taxation from IGN. Why is his name gone from my head? Reviewed the same game and gave it an 8.5 and never mentioned,
anything
about it. Which I'm assuming it's because he's, you know,
the man baby that he is, and it just didn't matter to him. But anyway, I don't know. There were some people who were saying that this kind of commentary belongs in opinion pieces, but I feel like it really belongs in these reviews.
Well, let's just lay this out there right now. Like, isn't a review an opinion piece?
Yes, it is. But a lot of people distinguish the sort of social commentary that you often see in opinion places from what belongs in a review. And I'm not certain that there should be a distinction there. I feel like if she were to put those sorts of opinions in a separate piece, no one would read it. But the fact that it's attached to a review for a game that people were anticipating on launch day means that people are actually going to read what she has to say.
Well, and
more people, for sure.
Doesn't it belong in there too, though? Like, isn't there a place for, like, hey, you know, if she takes those thoughts, moves them into another opinion piece, and the review goes up without that, isn't she doing a disservice to her readers? Like, if she was honestly disturbed by the issues she brings up, like, don't they belong in a review?
Right.
Like if a film is extremely gory and there's no point to it, and, you know, Jeff or I go, yeah, this is disturbing on many levels, and it didn't belong there. like is that wrong? Like,
I mean, the other thing is, how can you have true criticism without social commentary? Like, how can you take from a review from simply being an evaluation of someone's purchase and to being a true gauge of the value of a game inherently?
And I mean,
and ignore these issues. You can't. You have to confront them.
Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but I mean, the stuff she kind of calls out is, you know, separated from, you know, the rest of the review. In a fashion, it's
right.
Kind of.
I mean,
it's
the standard polygon thing. When they have something like that, they kind of put it outside in a box.
Right. And I mean, she said it's, you know, that. Here's what it was said. Dragon's Crown's serious liberties with female anatomy are distracting. That seems like an issue with the game to me. Like an issue she
yes.
took with the game.
Yes.
Two-player characters, the Amazon and the Sorceress, are explicitly sexualized with breasts literally bigger than their heads, with rear ends to match, and plenty of off-screen real estate. And plenty of off-screen real estate is dedicated to their respective jiggles and sachets. But at least these characters are powerful women with agency and a penchant for destroying rooms full of bad guys. She lays that out to move into the fact that the female NPCs are you know, basically, most of the women in the game are barely clothed, with heavy heaving chests, backs twisted in suggestive positions, some of their legs spread almost as wide as the screen. They're presented as helpless objects, usually in need of rescue. It's obvious, one-sided, and gross. I don't know. I feel like that impacted her opinion on the game. Like,
yeah.
That belongs in a review.
Right. And that's just it. All this commentary is contextualized within the scope of the game.
I also think, like, you know, this conversation comes up a lot. Like, you know, the medium getting more respect and this and that. You have to do some adult criticism like this, you know?
Right,
yes.
Like if you want the genre, if you want the medium itself to advance and become something that is widely accepted, we can't ignore the fact that this shit happens. Like, people don't ignore stuff in films. Like, they touch on it. Like, you know, just because it's there doesn't mean that, oh, it's a video game, we don't need to talk about it. Like, no, we do need to talk about it. That's what makes the medium go forward, but, you know, we keep holding it back.
And you know, and looking at film criticism, there will be movies that come out that some critics will, you know, accuse them of being sexist, and some critics won't. And no one fucking, like, it's not a news story.
Right, because it's... that reviewer's opinion. That it's that reviewer's experience with that film, with that game. Like, and that's what a review should be.
Yeah, I think the game community is just.
It's funny. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way I've always approached reviews, because I started out reading film reviews, and you find reviewers that kind of. You don't maybe find reviewers that adhere to your taste, but you find out about the reviewers by reading their reviews. So
right.
I know that Roger Ebert likes X type of film, and he doesn't like Y type of film. Well, if I generally like Y type of film, then I know that when he reviews that and he says he hates it, I'm probably going to like it.
Yeah, like I couldn't trust him for like horror films, because there'd be some I just really love, and he'd just be like, it's just a bunch of other teenagers getting killed. But then, and I'm, you know, I wouldn't know one way or the other if I'd like it or not. But then if he liked a horror film, then I'm like,
yeah, like that,
you know,
that's generally like, same with me, like a big horror fan. When I would read his stuff and he would go, I don't like this for a horror film, I'd be like, right, I'm gonna go watch that, because that's probably up my alley. And then if he's like, I do like this for a horror film, sometimes you go, you can just look at it from his perspective and go, I understand this because it is a well-made movie.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a great horror film.
Yeah.
So it's, you just have to find out what the reviewers are about. Like, there's a reason why I don't read the reviews on IGN anymore, because... I just don't care what any of them have to say. If you don't like what Polygon has, just don't read them. There's tons of other review sites out there. But I think they should be, you know, applauded for at least putting this stuff out there, trying to do actual criticism in the review. Even if it's,
yeah,
even if it's minor at that, like it's two paragraphs out of like a 1200 word review,
and it wasn't even that scathing. It was just like, yeah, I didn't really like that stuff, you know. It wasn't
right.
Like, it wasn't like totally like just tearing the game apart over it.
Yeah, it's like the characters in the game, which I mean, we knew about the characters way ahead of time, so we knew that they were going to be hypersexualized. And I mean, she said it's still distracting. Like, from a gameplay perspective, playing as these characters is distracting. And then, like, the NPCs, it's just, it's not necessary. It's just kind of foul, like, in her mind. I don't know. It's so dumb.
Well, Perfectly Sane Show applauds her efforts.
Yes, right. We do.
I also find it funny. I don't know if any of you caught some of the Twitter conversation. I don't know if you follow any of the people either, but I follow Arthur Geese, who is the reviews editor at Polygon, and I caught when this kind of hit, and people were yelling at him for putting a woman on this.
Right.
Like.
I like what he said about that too.
It's fucking absurd.
I believe the quote was, "If you're upset that I put a woman on to review this game, then I can't do enough to encourage you to go away from Polygon as fast as possible."
You almost have to agree. Like, I mean, if you're gonna have a problem with, you know, who they assign to do reviews, then please don't frequent their site.
Right.
They don't need you. It's fucking absurd. So nobody's going to play Dragon's Crown, though, right? Like,
I like the art style.
I think Don should gamefly it.
Yeah, it's not my type of game, I don't think.
I'm not into brawlers, so.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It looks really pretty, but I didn't... I don't know.
The Amazon is, like, I'm looking at the artwork right now. She is legitimately distracting. Like,
yes.
I mean, it is, like, awkward. Like, she has to have back problems. that was it for news, right?
That was all I had.
Jeff, we got any questions then?
I got one on Twitter and then several from Matt.
Okay.
From Twitter, Justin. He goes, how do you play Civ 5? Give pointers. I am lost in that game.
Tony.
How do you play Civ 5? I guess the biggest thing with any Civ game is the starting placement of your first city. You have to make sure it's in a spot where it can grow really quickly. From then, it really depends on which civilization you pick, because they're different civilizations are good at different things. Like, if you pick the Americans, they're really good at expanding. So you want to build as many settlers as quickly as possible so you can build as many cities as fast as possible and, like, claim as much of the world before anybody else can get to it. But, I mean, a lot of it's really experience-based. Make sure you keep looking at the, I think they call it the Civlopedia. The game gives you all the tools you need to play it, and they've made them really accessible. Like, anytime you build a unit, you can go and figure out exactly what that unit can do, and anytime you're, like, researching a technology, you can figure out, like, where it's going, and then I think that's the big thing, is just keep reading the stuff that they throw at you, because all that information is there. It also helps to play on an easier level. The AI in the game isn't particularly harsh, but if you're playing on, like, the upper levels, it tends to give bonuses to, like, growth for the AI so that they're, like, doing stuff a lot faster and have a lot more units than you do. That'll make it really hard for you to get anywhere. Whereas if you play on a lower level, you'll be able to, like, expand and, like, figure the game out without having all that pressure. So take it slow, read the stuff, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not anywhere near as experienced as Tony or Don with Civ, but I would definitely recommend take it slow. Do not rush. Like, you can rush turns, and if you're doing that, you're not learning how to play the game, and you very quickly get lost, because as right. the game expands, like as it moves on and progresses, like, it gets more complex. So,
and you also look up, and you'll notice that you have, like, three cities, and all of your opponents have, like, 10.
Right.
And they're all, like, way ahead of you in technology. You'll be like, what the hell did I do?
So I've been there multiple times.
I've only played Civ Revolution. And to me, the way to learn how to play that game is just play it a lot. Like, you'll start to figure, oh, that was my mistake in that game.
Yes.
Because I don't know if Civ 5 is the same. It's like a game that you play in, like, one sitting if you want to. It's only, like, an hour or two long.
Civ Rev is like that. Civ 5 is not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's going to take you a good, like, 15 hours to beat a campaign.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess maybe it's a little different then. Because, like, Civ Rev, that, it was like playing a board game, basically. And you'd be like, all right, that's where I fucked up. So next time I'll try to, like, improve on this.
Core Civ is like playing a board game. It's just a really long... long board game.
Well, he'll learn from his mistakes regardless. I think some of the fun in that shit is, like, when you make mistakes and you're like, oh, okay.
Like, oh, don't do that again. I think the other big thing in Civ 5 is you really have to take care when it comes to attacking enemy cities, because they made them really deadly. Even when they're ungarrisoned. Like, you have to make sure you move everyone into position and then move everybody into siege range at the same time, so that you end up like a concerted attack. Because if you come in with one or two units at a time, the city themselves just decimate them. So, take care.
What else we got, Jeff?
I got a couple from Matt. Mr. Too Fresh. There is a zombie outbreak, and the only person that can help you is the main character of the last video game you played. Who is your partner?
The main character of the last video game I played?
Yeah.
I'm fucked, because right before we started this, I was playing Face Noir, so I have a hard-boiled detective named Jack Del Nero. he's going to help me. He's an alcoholic, so I mean, maybe we'll have some fun together before we die. But
I have an undead shogun and defending me, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you should feel pretty confident.
I have the Animal Crossing villager, so he's got a net.
I'm gonna be surprised when you're dead.
Yes. Is there a word that makes you cringe whenever you hear it?
My boss, we were in a staff meeting today, and my boss said dwaddle instead of dollar.
Dwaddle. Yeah, see, for me, it's usually words that... You know what bugs me is when people, like, misuse words. Like, that, like they think they know the word, or they think they know the meaning of the word, but they're using it completely wrong. I can't think of any, like, great example right now. Like, something like when people say entitled when they mean titled. Or, right. That's not even a great...
What's the one, they put an ear in front of it. Goddamn, why can't I think of it now? Irregardless. I hate that word.
that's actually one of my dad's most hated ones. To me, it makes me laugh, because I think they said it in, like, the Big Lebowski. So I was just like, yeah, irregardless. But, yeah, there's words like that that bug me, but I'm trying to think of, like, a proper word where they're using it correctly, but it sounds pretentious. I'm sure there's ones like that, too, where I'm like, why would you say that when you could say something simpler?
I can't help myself. I'm pretentious like that.
See, I come from the school of writing where it's like, simpler is better. Like, if you have to use a thesaurus, you're doing it wrong, you know?
What if you don't need the thesaurus and the word just comes?
I don't know, I'm saying, like, but you never want to try to think of the you want to be exact in what you're trying to
precise,
say.
You want to be precise, that's right.
Yeah, you want to be precise.
That's what those large words are for. It's for precision.
You want to be precise, but I think in any case where there's a simpler word to use, you should use that instead of the one that lets people know. Because if you can get your point across either way, you might as well do it with like a chance of getting it across to more people, I guess.
I want to get my point across while looking as arrogant as possible.
See, like, if you spent a lot of time in, like, the English major, they would definitely be like, no, don't do that. But, I mean, I hear you, but I can't think of any great examples. Anything come to mind for you, Chris? Like, there's, like, a word that you hate?
Not really.
Not even YOLO?
I don't like that. I gotta go on that one.
Oh, my mom says library. It drives me nuts.
Library. Milk.
Like it's a berry?
Yes.
Okay.
Like it's some sort of fruit that you get books from. I don't understand.
Milk is one that bugs me when I see people say milk.
Or sandwich.
I like sandwich. yeah, and I like YOLO too. I'm a big champion of YOLO, so. I don't know. Nothing great comes to mind for me though. I'm sure, you know what, if I think of one, we'll mention it. I'm sure I'll come across it sometime in the next week. And it'll stick out to me even more because of that question. We just have one more from Mr. Too Fresh. He asked, what was the last thing you watched on VHS?
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Sadly, I do know mine. And neither of you could beat it, probably.
Probably not.
Homemade porno.
I was going to guess that, actually. that was... I didn't want to think it, but
yeah.
I didn't think it, like...
Thanks for that, Jeff.
I threw out my VCR years ago, right? And I actually think I threw out almost all my VHS tapes. All I have is, like, a couple copies of Halloween that, just because I'm a collector of Halloween stuff. Other than that, I literally threw out my VHS tapes. I was like, you're going to go find somewhere that actually still will buy them. They'll give you a penny or two for them. I was just like, fuck it. Like, the tapes I have are, like, home movies, which I want to get most of them converted to digital, but I do have one home porno that was on a mini VHS, and, like, I still have the old camcorder so I could watch it when I want. So I was watching porno with myself back when I was a porno star.
Fascinating.
That's why I laughed when I read the question, because it's like it came to mind. I'm like, yep, I've seen that probably in the last year or so. So,
I don't know. I honestly don't know what was in the VCR when it died. My wife was watching something, and It started to eat the tape, and then the eject button wouldn't work, so I beat it with a hammer, and then threw it all in the trash. So I don't know what happened. I don't know what was in there.
Do you miss the format at all?
No.
I'm trying to think if there's anything about it that I kind of miss. I keep thinking of things that like I don't miss, like rewind.
I hate the sound of the rewind.
Yeah. It's like, I can't think of anything that like was better about VHS. I'm sure there's got to be something that we lost.
No, there's not.
No?
The only thing that, I mean, and it's been improved now, obviously, but when there was that shift to DVD, you lost that ability to like record right from the television.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what I would use it for, but now there's a DVR, so you don't even need it.
Yeah, I really can't think of anything that I miss about the format. I miss video stores. I miss that.
I do. I miss video stores. I miss, like, Blockbuster, Hollywood Video.
Yeah, I like those places.
The ability to go in and kind of, like, you know, look at movies, pick one up, and then bring it home and rent it. Yeah, it's all there, right on your TV. But there was something, there's just something special about going in with your wife, girlfriend, or whatever, and it taking you like 35 minutes because the two of you can't decide on what to watch.
It's different browsing the walls than browsing like a menu on like, I don't know, Netflix. Because You see this stuff more. You get to pick it up, hold it in your hand, look at the back of the box. And also, when you make your decision, you really have to commit. So, yeah, you take a longer time doing it. Where on Netflix, you can just click play and then watch like 2 minutes and be like, fuck this. I'll watch something else. But, yeah, I just like the atmosphere of the video store, like walking into that, you know, into that environment. So, there is, you know what, I don't know if they have them by you, there's a really cool video store by me, but it's, unfortunately none of them are quite close enough for me to go to. They're called Family Video.
Yeah, I don't have any of those.
Dude, you could get, they're giving away movies there. It's like, 5 movies for $1, like, go for it, you know? Here's free popcorn. Like, they just will do anything
like
for
to, like, five movies for $1 to rent, or...
Yeah, like rent. Like, I don't know if that's the exact deal because I don't get to go into them much. But like, anytime I went in, it was like, this is crazy awesome here. Like, way better than Blockbuster or anything. And then like, their used stuff, like they had like used games really cheap, like way cheaper than you'd find them anywhere else. Like, they just didn't care. They don't care. They just want your business. I don't know how they like stay alive with all those deals. Like, they're always giving you coupons. Like, here's a free movie for your birthday and this and that. But they're doing something right, and I think it's just really driving their business, I guess, is just give this stuff away for really cheap. You'll get rented more than you would otherwise. Right. And we have a wide selection. Like, you don't have a wide selection on something like Redbox, you know?
No. I've never actually used a Redbox, so we'll say that.
I have used it once. It's cool, like, and I can see why it's really popular, because most people are just like, they kind of eat movies like junk food. They consume them like junk food. So, like, whatever's out now, that's what they'll watch. But to me, like, a lot of movies I'd want to see, they probably wouldn't even stock in a fucking Redbox. So.
Was that it for questions?
Yeah, that's all we got.
I did want to get your opinion on one thing before we close this out. The first Bioshock DLC hit today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
What was it? Something stupid? Don't tell me.
It was pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's an arena. That's basically it, right? It's like an arena thing, a battle arena.
That is ultra disappointing.
However, I am really kind of excited for the next thing of DLC, which is a kind of Noir detective story, where Booker is, he's a detective, and Elizabeth is something else, and it all takes place in Rapture before the fall.
That sounds good, yeah. But God, that's really disappointing if one of your three DLCs for a game like Bioshock is fucking a battle arena.
Yeah, and, well, yeah, because the combat sucks in that game. But
no, no, I wouldn't go that far, but it's like, dude, you know.
That's not what that game is for.
I expect more, and especially, like, Bioshock 2, I heard the DLC for that was, like, all super amazing, and that was, like, a different team.
I heard that, what was it, Minerva's Den was really good.
Yeah.
I thought the rest of it was multiplayer-based, though, so.
Okay, well, yeah, but the Minerva's Den one, I hear people talk about.
Yeah, I heard that's a fantastic piece of DLC. Yeah, it seems really weird, like, almost like...
They had no idea.
They were like, just, let's just get this or that. And that second and third piece of DLC is going to be linked together. So the second piece of that noir story will be the third piece of DLC.
Cool. Well, yeah. I probably won't even bother with the battle arena.
Battle arena. Come on, you got to play it. Tell us how great it is.
That's disappointing as fuck. Because I bought that season pass. Oh, well.
What, four months since that game was released, and then they hit you with that.
Yeah. You know what? They got me with it because I love Bioshock 1, so I wasn't totally opposed to having three DLCs for, like, what, $20?
But then you know why it's $20.
Yeah, but then you got the strategy guide for, like, free with it. So that's what I was like, all right, cool. I actually used the strategy guide in some of the harder parts near the end, so.
Fun.
I guess there's that.
Now you know why it was only $20.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, I'm never buying another, I'll tell you that. Fuck season passes.
I have bought them before, but I've only bought them for games, multiplayer games.
I could see for, like, Halo doing it, but Even then, I got burned on Halo 4, because guess what? I haven't touched that game since November. I haven't touched it since months it came out.
I just played it again last night. So good.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I'm really like, why don't I play that much? Because, like, I was all in the Reach. Like, I would play that a lot. But, oh, well.
Yeah.
I got a steel case out of the deal.
That steel case is nice, too.
Yeah.
The rest of that package, not so much.
Yeah.
Well, the season pass came with that package, too, so.
No, that's what I'm saying. Basically, I was buying it for the season pass. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be. I don't care about collector's editions, man. The only one I ever bought, I think, before Halo 4 was a New Vegas one, and I don't even know why I did that. I was just like, oh, it has poker chips. You know? I was just like, none of the stuff,
it's junk. It's always junk.
It's not even a secret, but yeah, all collector's editions, all the stuff in them are junk, and the biggest ripoff out there is the GTA 5 one that's coming out.
All right, what's in that one?
Alright, so you get the game for $60, or you could get, like a limited edition for $80, which has extra DLC and a steel case. Not a terrible deal. Then there's one that has that stuff, and it has, a baseball cap and a bank deposit bag, and it's $150!
Wow.
For a baseball cap and a bank deposit bag, you're paying, what, $70 more?
That's crazy.
One of the worst ones I've seen out there. The Splinter Cell one that's coming out looks cool because it comes with like a remote control plane or whatever.
Yeah, so some of, I mean, I never got the Call of Duty ones, but some of their like really big editions had cool shit in it. Like probably the cheap night vision goggles that you got, and then they had the drone. Was the drone last year?
Yeah. They had a cool one where you had it was a little Jeep or something, was it?
The RC car, yeah.
Yeah, that, I mean, whatever. That's at least you're getting something out of it. I don't think those goggles were probably worth it. Those were toy goggles.
No, no, but the RC car and the drone, actually, if you're into that shit, that sounded pretty cool.
Yeah,
the
upcoming
Total War Rome 2 one comes with a working catapult.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I wish I had $150 to spare. I'd be all over that.
Yeah, generally though, I almost always stick with just standard version of the game. Even with GTA 5, I'm not even gonna get the $80 one, cause whatever, I don't care. An extra weapon or two, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think there's any like special editions or upgraded editions coming out this year that I'm have any interest in.
I will be pre-ordering GTA 5 though to get the blimp. I am strangely excited to get the blimp. So
is that like a piece of DLC?
Yeah.
Pre-order like, DLC for
yeah.
like the, one of the vehicles or something.
Yeah, well, like if you pre-order it, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's just at GameStop or if it's everywhere, but like if you pre-order it, you get like it's called an atomic blimp. It's just like a giant blimp to fly around in the game. I was like, the hell yeah, dude, I don't want to fly around a blimp and like crash into a building and shit.
Fucking burning Zeppelin.
And just jump out of it. Fuck yeah.
Might have to do that. I'll have to look into that, see if I can get it on Amazon.
They're about
the
to start controlling DC with Zeppelins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're bringing in two of them with, like, advanced detection equipment to protect us from missiles.
Nice.
And, you know, other stuff.
Well,
probably watch us, too.
Yeah. That's actually probably very accurate.
I don't doubt it. Like sound equipment that can hear anything.
Like, oh yeah, we're protecting everybody from missiles. Let's
sure.
Let's get our missiles. Awesome listening gear out. Oh well, that's it. Next week is our third anniversary. Jeff may be recording from a closet.
Right.
Fozzie will be back, and the website will officially be launched. So.
Oh wow. Fast approaching.
I don't think we've ever mentioned what it is on the podcast.
I don't know. Yeah, so,
I don't think so.
Go ahead, mention it.
CriticallySane.com. Get excited.
Yes. Get excited. Come and comment on the site, on the articles. I think we've had some interesting discussion pieces up there.
Yeah, definitely.
And more to come, so... We're gonna keep producing content. Like, so it's not gonna launch.
Whether you read it or not, so.
Yeah, and we're not gonna stop. Like, but yeah.
Yeah.
What was that, Jeff?
You guys are producing so much content, I can't keep up with it.
Edit faster, Jeff. Come on.
I try. It doesn't take me long. Usually, I mean. You know, usually it's just touching up little things, like really little things. But yeah, I've just been busy. But yeah, so stop working. Stop working so hard, guys.
Well, I won't have, like, I'm done for the week, so there won't be anything else for me. So just finish up with it.
All right.
Next week I might have two reviews, but.
Jesus, man. How? It takes me a long time to write a review. Like, I mull over every sentence I write.
Don't you think about, you know, what you're going to say while you're playing the game, though?
I do, and it kind of ruins my enjoyment of the game almost. Just that as well. Because, like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, you're like kind of taking mental notes or actual physical notes while you're playing the game. You're like, I just want to play.
All right, so, Tony, do you take physical notes when you play? Yeah, okay. I don't either. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't, like, the only one, because if you were like, I take physical notes too, I'd be like, oh yeah, me too.
I
write 30 pages per game.
No, I do a lot of the writing in my head as I'm playing it, but then there's certain times where I'm like, I might not remember this come review time, where I'll have a Word document for that review, and I'll like throw like a sentence or two, like, or even just half a sentence, because I'll know what my notes mean, you know?
Right.
To go back to them.
You know, I sometimes do a post-its. Like sometimes I'll write shit down and just like my wife hates it too, because like I'll do it at work, I'll be thinking about something, I'll write it on a post-it, and then I bring it home and then they just like sit everywhere. She's like, what the fuck is with the post-its?
That's fucking old school. I like that.
But yeah, I generally don't take physical notes, but I'm also not playing 30-hour games for the most part either, so.
I am, though.
Yeah, well, yes. You're playing strategy games, too, though, so. Yes, we have stuff coming up on the site. Next week on the show, we have some games to give away. Let me tell you what they are. It's going to take me a second here. Yeah, we have a bunch of Steam codes to give away for some Deep Silver games. Which is not loading right now, but I believe there's a Deep Silver packet, and then there's like another one that has the complete Saints Row 3 in it, and another one with Dead Island Riptide, which is a fairly new game. We'll be giving that shit away next week, so yay us. Listen to us. Send us questions. Tell Fozzie to come up with a hypothetical. He needs to start thinking about it now.
That's right.
So
we
he has it.
Warn him ahead of time.
Yeah.
Actually, no, we shouldn't.
No, let's see if he just remembers. And then slight format change the week after that, because each of us is going to start bringing a segment to the show. Not each week. We'll have one segment a week from different people. So. Tony, I believe, is prepping a game show. So
yeah.
Interested to see how that turns out. And outside of that, yeah, go to the site, check us out. There might be a contest or something going on there. Like us on Facebook whenever that gets launched. I'm not in charge of that. I don't like Facebook, so.
Whoever leaves the best comment on the site gets a copy of my porno tape.
Okay.
I think we want people to comment, though.
Right. That's not the prize for the comment. That is a private thing that Jeff is doing on his own, not sanctioned by the rest of us.
You don't have to send your address for that one. We'll track you down.
If Jeff contacts you and says that you have won, you may want to like make yourself private and block.
If you know somebody you don't like, give him their address, perhaps.
Yeah, so that's it. We'll be back next week. Say goodnight, Jeff.
Goodnight, Jeff.